Well, welcome to our first ever Unpresentable Parts Eve edition. Woohoo!
Yay!
I am Sam Blake, and along with me is Jasmine Cherry. And we aim to make the unpresentable presentable. So super excited to be able to have our first Eve edition today. And really happy to be here. How are you, Jazz?
I'm excited too. I'm glad we're finally doing this. We're ready, and I'm ready to go.
Oh, good. Well, today we are in our inaugural Eve edition. We are going to actually talk about, I'll give you a theme here, This Is Us Now. We're going to take some time to get to know each other, and you guys will get to know us as we're growing in our relationship, getting to know each other. So we're super excited about that. We're going to explore our identities, what makes us who we are. And so just really kind of talking through that, what has really kind of marked our early life experiences? Or do you want me to start kind of be as grounded in?
Well, I did want to say this before. I mean, you can definitely go first, Sam. I have no problem with that. But I think for all the listeners, as you know, you're embarking on this journey with us, that it's just, we think it's essential that you guys do know us. And as we introduce ourselves and kind of set some of the context, as we'll continue to get to know each other throughout this year. So I'm excited about that. But you can definitely go ahead and take the wheel, Sam.
Yeah, I can do that. But you know what? Let's go ahead and talk about the unpresentable things we feel today, right? What makes us, what about us today coming into this podcast is unpresentable? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, we'd rather kind of keep behind a hidden curtain and put our best foot forward, right?
Yeah.
So I'll start. For me, I had some anxieties that I was bringing into from yesterday into today. There's some interactions, just, you know, how you talk to somebody or something happens and you mull it over and mull it over and mull it over in your head, and just it's like that anxiety part. And so I think coming into our time together, I wanted so much to just be able to be present, but while warring with the stomach pit anxieties of just some interactions that are kind of like residual. So that's kind of the unpresentable thing for me today. It's how can I give here authentically and be real, right? Be real, not come here faking it. Like, oh yeah, life is great. But but knowing, no, I'm actually feeling a little bit of stuff here, but I'm coming here fully present and authentic.
Yeah. Well, for me, y'all, so I do feel like it's just time for me either to get a new wardrobe or what. I do feel like I've been bumming it probably a little bit too much, and that's okay. And I know sometimes you hear the saying, sometimes it's true, not all the time. When you look good, you feel good, right? That's not true for all the time now, but I do think I'm like, okay, Jasmine, let's make sure. Especially now as I'm looking for a job, right? And you get comfortable at home as you're applying, and then, you know, you're just around the house. And so it's just you. So, but I do think I'm like, all right, let me make sure I'm shaving these armpits. I'm doing like just taking care of me, you know, just keeping up with myself. I do think it'll help me, you know, in the start of your day, you know, you just get out, put on some, you know, nice comfy clothes, whatever that is. But I have been noticing that, like, all right, Jasmine, now. Okay, girl.
Yeah, that's funny that you said that. I actually blew off an eyebrow appointment to do this. So mine looking a little crazy right now, but that's all right. But I think I'm really excited about doing this podcast with you, Jazz, because I think that as we grow to get to know each other, I think even the things we've talked about, what we want to discuss, it's super exciting. But I also think, oh my goodness, it's pretty scary too, to have these conversations with people I don't know who are going to be hearing me and don't know who I am, don't know where I come from, don't understand, you know, my frame of thought, you know, all of those different things. And I thought maybe as we start off our Eve edition of Unpresentable Parts, we can let people into a little bit of who we are and what makes us think the way we think, what drives us and different things like that. And I think just kind of going back to the roots of my identity and our identity, I think when we did the first one, Unpresentable Parts with the guys, we talked a little bit about that, but being able to do that just one-on-one with the girls would be really nice. And so, like, I think where I come from, right? Like my family dynamics, I come from the West Indies. I was raised in St. Lucia in the country. So I'm a country girl, which is really funny, Jazz, because being a country girl, actually, it's what a lot of people don't know is that St. Lucia, the most popular music, do you know what the most popular music in St. Lucia is? Just take a guess.
No.
Country and Western.
No.
Yes. Yes.
No, I would have never guessed.
Girl, I grew up, and you probably don't even know these names, on Conway Twitty, Loretta Lynn.
Nope.
Jim Reeves.
What?
Girl, yes. Yes, Crystal Gayle.
Okay.
Girl.
No, I did not know this.
Yeah. And then on Saturdays, our big thing was either the karate movies or the country. And on Sundays, actually, Sunday afternoons was the country and Western movies.
Really?
I'm being very serious. Even right now on our island, country and Western dances are a big deal. So
wow,
it's so interesting, right? I grew up on an island, and I'll have to tell you the story one day about why that is, why country and Western is such a big deal. There is history behind that. But I grew up a country girl. I grew up I love big trucks. I love cowgirl boots. That's a paradigm for me, which seems so off, right? From someone who's from the Caribbean. And as I come to the U.S. and recognize some things and learn some things, you know, that it's just all the paradoxes that my life is. I grew up country and Western. Culturally, it was country music, reggae, soca, calypso, you know. My island, it's mainstream. The language of culture, the language of business, the language of school is British English, because it was once a British colony. And but the culture, the home culture, is very French, because it was also a French colony. So I feel like I've grown up with so many different pieces of the African diaspora, you know, the colonialism, that's what it is, right? When you colonization and on all of that. So
the colonizers.
Yes. And so my childhood memories are so, they're so enmeshed with so much. And I think as I have grown up in different parts of coming into the U.S. and having to kind of like figure out which one am I? You know, am I country and Western? Am I West Indian traditional? Am I, you know, it's just all of those different things. So I think my childhood experiences, I just remember them being so full of so many different things. And also I lived in two worlds. I had family that was well off and family that wasn't. And even with the family that wasn't, I didn't know I was poor because we always had food, you know, and then the family that had more, you know, I think I grew up in never having a specific world that was, I don't know how to explain it. I didn't have a specific space that I belonged in. And that's, so what about you?
So me, coming from the States, coming from Long Beach, California, where I was born and raised, I grew up with a single mother, and my father and my mother had split. So before I was born, so there was not a male presence really there. And so I have an older brother. We're 12 years apart. And it's a similar story to his as well. So his father wasn't much in his life, more than mine for sure. But I think growing up in poverty or growing up on welfare, and in certain ways, similar to you, like you didn't know you were poor. And maybe because everyone I was with, hanging around with, we were kind of in the same boat. However, when I started to go to public school, my mom made sure that we went to great school districts. So the public schools were great. And so then you're able to see how other people live and you're able to see those things. But I do think as I got older that I do think I carried some shame with me as far as dad's not in the picture. I just feel like I was this walking stereotype. And knowing a lot of my family, right, we're raised in some rough parts. And a lot of my family is from Compton in LA. And, you know, we had some rough times, but we also had some great times too. But I think once I got into other spaces, I remember just being self-conscious about how do people see me? Will they see me as this walking stereotype? Will they see me all the things I do not have? And, you know, I grew up with kind of fake it till you make it. Although we don't have it, either act like you have it or act like you're about to have it or whatever, like so people, you know, my mom was trying to probably create this pride in me, which is great, right? All parents want that for their children. But I think it was hard to see the different worlds that I was in, and then being on the swim team, right? You know, there's not a lot of Black folks on the swim team. So then going over there, other folks' houses for meetings and all this stuff, you see how other people live. I'm like, wow, you know? And so I do feel like just having those two sides, and of course having friends. Long Beach is a very diverse city. So I had friends from all walks of life and it was really great. But I don't know, it was hard to, I was trying to fight not to walk into the world feeling without, right? I'm already a minority. And then I feel like I have all these other things stacked up against me in other people's eyes. So yeah, that was very interesting. And that really has played a big role in my life, or a big piece of my life growing up, even outside of high school. I remember just a real quick story for Greg and I, our wedding, when we were in Kentucky. And it's so crazy. Like, I remember talking about the music and this, you know, I remember just being so like, I don't want people to think we are ghetto with the music that we're going to play. And I was so like obsessed on that point. I'm like, wow. So it didn't really occur to me until years later about that, but just seeing how those things play, like as we're going to bring all different types of people, how are they going to view us? Are they going to view us as these hooligans? You know, but I'm like, wow, it's our wedding. It's about us. Why am I thinking about what everybody else thinks about our culture and what we like? If they don't like it, they shouldn't be there. But so things like that have definitely played a role in my life.
Yeah, that's really good. I love that you went so deep with that, Jazz, and was just so vulnerable with those parts of your life. And I think even as you talked about the societal stuff, because I think there's that at your wedding, how that played into it, you know, because I remember coming to the US, I came to Florida when I was 14 years old, 10th grade. And the school I went to was Colonial High School. And Colonial High School at the time, they had split the following year, but the year I came into Colonial High School, it was, you got to understand, Florida, what it is now, Orlando, what it is now, because I was in Orlando, is not what it was then. And I had to grow into that, right? Remember, I'm coming from country and Western. I come and Caribbean as well. So it's a very big blend. So I come to the U.S. and my high school is it's like half of it are Hicks. And the other part of it are Puerto Ricans and Black kids, Black American kids. I was, at the time, I was the only West Indian student that I was aware of in my high school. There was one more kid that I would later learn had Jamaican roots, and we actually became good friends. But, and I bring this up to say, I connected with the Hicks. Because that's what everybody called them. I'm not trying to be all, but that's what, in high school, that's what we were. It was like the country and Western kids. Because, you know, in high school, you have your labels, you know? Right. And so I connected with the kids who were country and Western, who, because there was that similarity, but it alienated me from the African-American kids. And yeah, it was so hard coming in and fitting in. But then with the kids who were country and Western, what I didn't and what I had to learn was most of them came from very racist families. In my high school, I had to learn that a lot of my people that I connected with in high school also would say things to me like, I can never take you home. You can never come to my town. Mm-hmm. There's a town called Christmas, Florida. My aunt was always like, do not go anywhere with those people. There are a lot of, you know, KKK is big there. So I had to learn what the KKK was coming in. And so it's coming into the United States and going, okay, here's how I was raised. This was all wonderful and it seemed great. But when I come to the US, there's a connotation to this. There's an exclusiveness that I can't really fully participate in because I'm not supposed to like this. And because I like it, I'm excluded. And because I get along with this group, I'm excluded from a group that looks like me, but we look alike, but we're not very similar in culture.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, you've got the Hispanic kids in between. So we connected culturally too, because we're from the Caribbean. And so it was just very interesting, Jazz. And I think even as you talked about your roots, I also faced abuse in my childhood. And so not belonging in any world, having all these separate things, I was definitely one who held a lot inside. So I performed. I just learned how to perform. And so the societal expectations or, you know, who you're supposed to be or look like a certain thing. So it's how do you do that? And it's interesting because I think even as I hear your story, you grew up in a way where you can assimilate anywhere, but then still haunted by this where I come from, you know, and almost, it almost feels like a lot of my life I've had imposter syndrome, you know, I'm going to be found out that I don't really belong here, that I don't really have a place. I don't really have a home. So I think it's learning how to mature through that, how to grow through that. Those, I think those were a lot of the things that I was facing coming into this country, learning how to be dealing with my own, growing into that to go, who am I now? Right. All those things were shaping me along the way.
Yeah.
All those different pieces. And I do think a very pivotal moment for me though, that was really significant in my influencing my identity is it was 2018. And that's a lot, you know, 2018, I've have two kids now, I've grown up here in the United States, I've been shaped, I've learned, I've grown, I've gone through a million different things. I've kind of learning my space spiritually, emotionally, you know, it's just so much all over the place. And I can't wait for us to explore those things more. But in 2018, I got a phone call and it rocked my world. I was home, it was just a normal day and I got a phone call and I was the phone call in the conversation said, listen, my abuser's name was Gregory. It's like Gregory died.
Wow.
And like, literally, even when I say it, I catch my breath because in that moment, I felt like my world shifted because I had never lived in a world where my abuser didn't exist. And in that moment, I realized I had been living as a victim all my life.
Wow.
It was the first time I felt like everything. Yeah, I never felt like I belonged in a world, but I held a lot inside, but I didn't realize there's this overarching thing where I was controlled in some sense as I also saw myself as a victim my whole life. And I'd done therapy, I'd done all those things, but literally in that moment, it's like the world shifted. It just felt like it stopped. And I had to learn how to exist in a world where I wasn't living under the victimization of my abuser. Even if they hadn't been in my life for years.
Yeah.
I was
That's
still
trauma.
Living my life. Yes. And so I think that was such a huge, significant shift for me with my identity. And there's so many lessons I learned through that. So many, it was definitely a huge turning point, but so many lessons, so many challenges. I don't know if that makes sense, what I'm saying, but it all contributes to who I am now. It's mm-hmm. that I had to learn who this person is, who does not live in a world where her abuser is, you know, not 6 feet under. And then also deal with how did I feel about that? And
right.
Who am I then? I don't know who am I outside of this. And I thought I right. did, but I also didn't right. realize I was seeing myself through that lens for so long, and how much control it had over me. So yeah, hopefully as the people, as you guys are listening, this is flowing for you. This is us kind of sharing all the, this, you know, this is who we are and working through it. But it was a big shift for me, that access to, you know, that's how many years ago, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22. Yeah, it's 6 years ago. So I think it's after 2018, I am 6 years mm-hmm. in to this new person. And imagine all the things that have happened.
Yeah.
Racial pandemic.
Right.
Health pandemic, COVID pandemic, mm-hmm. you know, personal health things. It's, I'm this new person.
Yeah.
Navigating this new space while learning who I am.
Right. I know you would think, or most people would probably think you would just be celebrating, right? And it's crazy. It's very layered, right? Things mm-hmm. like that. For me, a pivotal moment, one of them. So growing up, I think some parents can do this. I feel like me, as you know, my first time being a parent, I'm probably more aware of this now. I think my mother, she did such an amazing job, right? And there's so much that you can do by yourself, you know, mm. but I think she tried to show me a lot of things that she was not exposed to, especially when it came to education, all these things. And in a way, she kind of was writing the story for me and not letting mm. me write the story. And so, you know, even now I'm thinking, again, my daughter's only 4, but when she gets to a point where, and even now, right, how you want to empower your children to be able to make decisions. I don't think my mother knew how to do that well. And mm. I think she had certain goals for me that she wanted me to do. And so I think that what it did, I think the downside of it was that it did not give me strength to make my own decisions. Once I went to college, what do I want to do? Because now I'm thinking, okay, what would my mom want me to do? And it was kind of her voice in my head, and I didn't have my own. And so I think that was a bit of the downfall, and I'm sure that was definitely not her intention, right? Mm-hmm. She wants me to be successful and wants me to do all these things. So many decisions were made for me. And I know, I'm sure I made some as well, you know. So once I got older, it was really hard, right? It's made me a people pleaser. It made me so concerned about what other people want instead of, I feel like I couldn't even hear my own voice. Or if I did, I would just bury it because I'm like, well, I believe in or what I think, in which most people, when they meet me, they think I'm outgoing and so friendly, and they would probably never think about these things. But I'm like, really, it has really been just kind of like paralyzing, that fear of making my decision. So in 2019, having a daughter about 3 months before the pandemic, so she was born in December, but that really rocked my world and was a pivotal point, because now this is okay, Jasmine, this is your body, this is your daughter, and how you want to raise her and help her and try whatever it is. You know, if you want to breastfeed, not breastfeed, like, just think about everything would give me so much anxiety. And I'm like, somebody please tell me what to do. just tell me what to do and I will do it. But it was like, no, 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 Jasmine, this is you. This is, and your husband, obviously, but in my case, right, having a partner with me, and God there. But like, Jasmine, nobody's about to force you to do anything. So what you gonna do? What you want to do? Do you want to breastfeed her? Do you want to give her formula? Do you want to do this? Do you want to do that? Like, whatever you want to do. And that scared the living daylights out of me, Sam. I was like, oh, what? Why did I even decide to have a child? Why did this happen? Because I'm so incapable. I'm so incompetent. I'm thinking all that I am not, because I can't trust my voice. And you know, this is my husband's first child too. So he's kind of like, just choose something, go for it. I'm with you, whatever you want to do. Mm-hmm. And people say that to me, that can be the most scariest thing. Cause it's like, okay, they don't have an opinion. They're looking for me to have an opinion, but I'm looking at you to have an opinion. So then I can, you know, so I've worked on that through therapy too. But just, the past 4 years have really been, what do I want to do? Mm. You know? Yes, it's been very, very tough for me because of that. And just believing in myself and not being afraid to fail and to, or not even fail. That can be a harsh word. Fail, or just some things might not go as planned, but it's okay. Just try it. It's all right. Just go for what, just do something. Just don't stand still. And a lot of people's, you know, that whole fight, flight, or freeze response. I'm the freeze. And I was finally telling my therapist, I'm like, look, I'm tired of being frozen now. Okay.
So,
I'm still working through it, but I've come a long way. But I definitely feel like having a daughter was the thing where it's like, wow, Jasmine, you know, what do you want to do?
That is really, I think a lot of women feel that, Jazz. Because, and it goes back to that imposter syndrome. I think a lot of women feel that. And I think, I love that you talk about the people pleasing part, because, and you say, oh, people wouldn't think that about me. Girl, I get that. I get that. You know, I work in the ministry. I help women sit and study the Bible with women, help families. And it can feel, especially prior to 2018, that imposter syndrome, it can feel like that. Because you're coming into that room and you're supposed to know what to do. You're supposed to know what to say. You're supposed to, and then you try to do that and then you make colossal mistakes. And now you feel like, I never belonged anyway. I should have never been there. I shouldn't have even been, you know, and it's that cycle, kind of like what you're saying. And I think when you say the freeze, flight, the fight, flight, or freeze, interestingly enough, like you, I'm a freezer. I freeze. I am frozen. Wow. Now you wouldn't know it on the outside, because on the outside, I'm fighting you tooth and nail, because I was trained to fight. My grandmother, you know, growing up, my grandmother would say I, looking back, it makes sense, right? I had so much anger inside. I was so frozen inside from my pain, from my, you know, abuse that nobody else knew, you know, didn't feel protected. Didn't feel like I was. So I was a fighter. I fought everybody. You look at me wrong, I'm fighting you. Talk about my mom, I'm fighting you. And I funny thing, guys, I never fought girls. I always fought boys. My whole life, I fought boys. And it makes sense now, but it didn't then. And so my grandmother, because so many people would keep coming to her house to tell her I got in a fight with their kid again, that her thing would be, I don't care, you know, she would say, oh yeah, you know, she'd speak in Creole to them and go, okay, oh, you know, she, and then they'd leave and she'd say, did you beat them up? And I'd be like, yeah. She goes, you better, because if you don't beat them up, I'm gonna beat you. So it was, if you're gonna fight, you better win, you know. Right. And so in my fight, flight, or freeze, I froze inside, but I fought outside. And so what you're saying is, and the decision-making, oh my goodness, it was like, Tim can attest to this. I would be at the grocery store. If he asked me to buy one specific brand or can, I know this, people will not believe this about me. I literally would call Tim 3 or 4 times. They don't have this one. Should I get this one? What about this one? Oh, what do you this one. And I still do this, but I'm better. I'm better. I'm cognizant of it because I have language for it. I'm but the decision making, the desire to please, I want to be liked.
Right. Yep. Mm-hmm. Right.
But that has also been the thing that has been my biggest source of pain is a desire to be liked. And I think that is where I'm so grateful for my relationship with God, because though I did all this work, right? Became a Christian in college, really started to work towards my identity being in Christ, being formed by Christ. Mm-hmm. What I did was I transferred my people pleasing from the unhealthy people in the world, in the secular world, to transferring it to people in the church.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so my people pleasing didn't stop. It just made me a really eager leader, which was unhealthy.
Yeah.
Because my motivations were to please the people that were leading me. Like I want to be good for this person, and not realizing how much, once again, that the idolatry, right?
Mm-hmm.
That my identity, there was so much idolatry ladled in it, because, you know, if I did a lesson, I want to make sure, does everybody feel good? Are we all good? You know, no one's really mad. And it was a great lesson. And Sam, it was good. It was good. I needed you to like that. I needed you to be moved by that. And not really realizing, oh my goodness, this all comes from my childhood. This comes from me wanting to please, me not wanting to stand out too much, because if I rock the boat too much, then someone's going to dig deeper and may realize I'm not supposed to be there.
Yeah.
And I don't know, is that making sense? Is it coming, you know?
It does. And how so many things come from our, those core memories that we have and our environment and all those things. So it's so crazy, right? Things that happen to us when we're 4, 5, 6, 7 through 10, whatever. It's like, wow, we still can deal with those things as an adult. And you would think maybe we would be over that. But it's okay, right? Because we're all works in progress. We are working. It's about the journey, right? Not just the end result, but we're working on those things. And like how you said, you have the language for it. You're more self-aware. So it helps you so much more now. So amen, right? Amen for the growth. But it is crazy, you know? And I've learned to not shame myself about it, because I can be the shame girl and can walk with my head down. But it's like, you know, here's those unprisonable parts, these things about me, but I'm okay. But, like, you know, we all have unprisonable parts.
Honestly, Jazz, sometimes I think you mentioned something, you said shame, right? Brene Brown, I love Brene Brown. I don't know if you've ever read her stuff, but she has this quote where she says, guilt says, I have done something bad. Shame says, I am bad.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I'm a quote girl. I pick up quotes all over the place. I love them. I probably have a million Pinterest quotes saved. I don't know what I'm going to do with them. I don't know what I'm going to do with all these quotes. I'm going to find a way to use them. But, you know, I love that you said that, because you realize why a lot of my people pleasing, a lot of that came from shame. Shame of that I wasn't good enough. Shame that... Yeah. You know, and it's you don't realize it. You don't realize those things are driving you. And as women, it's these expectations in society, we're constantly trying to reach them. Yes. And I think it hurts relationship, because we're so busy trying to hide our true selves. We actually miss out on connecting with each other and having it's not commiseration. That's not the word I'm looking for, but it is connecting in a way that's authentic, where it's not full of judgment. And I think we miss so much of those spaces because we're so afraid. We have so much shame. We look at ourselves as bad. I know I'm bad. I am not, I have done something bad. I'm bad. You know, muddle over, I make a mistake, and it's no longer I made a mistake. It's I am a mistake. I am a mistake. Mm-hmm. I've completely messed this up. And so it just, which is really interesting. Like we got a puppy recently, and you can see how this thing comes into play. I didn't know to buy a smaller kennel for the puppy. Okay. So we had too big of a, the kennel was too big. And so trying to train the puppy, I had already made at least 3 different mistakes. And in my mind, it was like, I am a mess. How could I do this? How could I not know this? How can I, you know, I've totally messed this puppy up for life. Here I go again. Mm. And it's just so ridiculous how quickly, you know, you get healthy, but how quickly you can go right back to the what someone would call stinking thinking, you know, mm-hmm. that I am bad. I am not good at this. I am not just at this, but I'm not good at anything. And just kind of going back to, wait, God has given me so many, which is where coming back to the faith part, right? How do I, and how have I been trying to use my my new identity in Christ and really how God kind of opens your eyes to see where you're at. And I love that, right? Because mm-hmm. he's so patient.
Amen.
Because literally I'm 27 years old spiritually this year. I mean, it was 20 years of me, like 21 years of me being like this.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought I was good. And how so, girl, I thought, oh, look at me. I'm spiritual. I'm helping people while I'm having imposter syndrome. But I'm thinking I'm a good Christian, girl. I'm just, you know, and people are looking from the outside thinking she's so spiritual and she's so strong and she's so, and it's not like those things are wrong. It's that, I can, it's like learning kind of like in this journey, this new six year of my 27 years. It's this journey where we have more information now. We have more willingness to go to therapy now. I mean, I've been doing therapy my whole life, I feel like, but a deeper depth, a deeper understanding, a deeper acceptance of it. So we're learning we can hold all those spaces, right? I can be strong and I can be weak.
Yep.
I can be confident, but I can also be insecure. And that dichotomy isn't necessarily a bad thing. It's this paradox, right? It's not a bad thing. It's that kind of going back to, okay, now I am actually understanding a bit more. Oh, when I am weak, then I am strong. It makes more sense to me in Christ, right? I can apply that to my spiritual, my spiritual doctrine is starting to shape me in a different way, in a healthier way, because I'm healthier emotionally. Right. I'm healthier spiritually. Right. I'm not being defined by my abuser. Who knew that, you know, there's a scripture, I believe it's in Kings. I can reference, sometimes I make a horrible job. So if someone's listening and they know where it is, fantastic. But it talks about how at one point the Israelites worship other gods alongside God.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized, whoa, I have been worshiping my abuser. He was Lord of my life, even after I made Jesus Lord of my life, that my motivations, my life, my decisions were still being controlled to some degree by him. And I hadn't fully given it over to Christ. And all those experiences that made me who I am, along with the abuse, God was working to refine it. And I, you know, he was putting me in spaces where I can identify with many different people. I can connect with many different people. It's not that I was an imposter. It's that God gave me several different avenues and experiences that I can, I can sit with the super wealthy. I can sit with, I can sit on a dirt floor with the super poor. And it didn't mean I was an imposter. It didn't mean I was not authentic. I could be authentic in all those spaces, but life labels us and tells us we need to be this, we need to be that, we need to be here. We either need to be in this clique, you know, like when I came into the United States and it was the high school, I couldn't be with the Hicks or, you know, I had to be with the Puerto Rican kids or the Black kids because I look like the Black kids, or I identify with the Puerto Rican kids culturally because of the Caribbean. And coming into you know, where Paul says, I can be all things, you know, I can be all, I'm all things to everyone. I'm all things to all man.
Yeah.
Learning how to do that in a healthy way while dealing with my people pleasing nature, mm-hmm. while dealing with my trauma, while sometimes not knowing I'm really a people pleaser and and ruled by my trauma. But God being so patient and all of that, and yeah. loving me through all right. of that, I think
it's amazing.
Honestly, that has gotten me through it in so many ways, because it doesn't make sense to me. Right. Like, that kind of love doesn't make sense to me.
Right.
That kind of acceptance doesn't make sense to me.
Right.
I can't wrap my head around it, but I know that me, this person now, it's not who I was 6 years ago. I think that I have been talking a lot. And
it's all right.
And just so you know, because you're getting to know me, right? I am actually a true introvert. I am a true introvert. So deep conversations, I can talk for hours. Small mm-hmm. talk, I'm gonna fall asleep on you in 2 minutes. I despise small talk. Okay. So I wanna make sure I kind of just stop for a minute and give you time before we have to end this podcast, because I'm so excited we're gonna have so much more time to talk about so many more things. But just for mm-hmm. you to, you know, get some of your thoughts in there before we sign off with our viewers or our listeners.
Okay. Yes. Well, thanks, Sam. Like, because you're such an example for me, it's just so easy to sit up here and listen to you. I'm like, where is my popcorn? Okay, where are my M&Ms? Let me go ahead and listen to you. And, you know, but yes, everyone, we are getting to know each other, and I'm really excited. I like what you say about the different boxes that you have fit in, and that I think it's amazing because how many lives and experiences and things you're able to come in contact with throughout those different boxes. And although a lot of things are changing, I do still feel like it could be hard, especially growing up, right? When it was rigid, here are the rules, you know? And it's like, we're multifaceted, right? We have so many different layers to us. And if I was in one box, right, I'm on the swim team, I'm with predominantly white girls, and you're a part of this different world here in high school. And sometimes high school, middle school, I'm sure it can be the worst for many people. And that's where mm-hmm. a lot of people start to learn about the divisions of things, mm-hmm. right? Which sucks. I'm like, oh, sometimes I like think about that for my child. Again, she's only 4, but I'm like, man, she's gonna learn some stuff when she mm-hmm. gets into the public spaces. Mm-hmm. But it was hard for me to navigate myself I fit in these different boxes too. And that because I fit in this box, doesn't mean that I look down on the other one, you know? And it's mm-hmm. really a blessing, and it makes us, you know, full dynamic people that have these different experiences, and how we're able to touch other people's lives and that they touch our lives. Right. Mm-hmm. So it's like, not a bad thing, but I hate that that's what we grew up on, is that this is you mm-hmm. and that's it. And I feel like becoming a Christian into our fellowship, it was just now that you have been baptized, you are reborn, you are a Christian, you know, now we're just in this one box. Everybody's in one box, and it's titled God. So like nothing else. And that's really hard, because that's not realistic. You know, mm-hmm. and I feel like, sure, in heaven, but heaven's still going to be diverse, right? Yada, yada, whatever. Mm-hmm. But like, it's like, okay, we try to erase, right? We want to erase race. We want to erase whatever it is that's not of God, erase it all. And now we're all coming. And it's like, you know, we're all the same, and mm-hmm. we're not. And I think we do a disservice, you know, as a Christian fellowship when we treat it like that, you know? And so I feel like, you know, we've been learning the hard way of talking about these issues and these different boxes, because we live in the world. These things are happening. So I just appreciate you saying that and knowing like how much it has just shaped your life. Like these are good things. You know? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not bad. So I've learned to become more confident and knowing, you know, I know some people talk about the good old code switch, which is a real mm-hmm. thing, mm-hmm. but it's like, how do I still stay true to myself in these different environments?
Yeah, no, I appreciate you sharing that, Jazz. And I think it really leads into kind of, as we are closing our time with our viewers, I do want to encourage anyone who's listening to us right now. I keep saying viewers, but listeners, I do encourage anyone who's listening to us right now to kind of think through your own identity and really maybe today or tomorrow, this month, which is Women's Month. It's Women's Month, guys. Yeah. Share your story with another person, another woman. And I love Jazz. I think this leads us into kind of the premise really of what we're going to be doing with the Eve Unpresentable Parts. Is you talked about that box, that Jesus box, that it almost leads us to a place of we come in, and I can only speak about our tribe, right? Our fellowship of churches, because that's where I'm, mm-hmm. but we come in and we belong to this fellowship of churches and we're in our box and it's this level of conformity and uniformity. Mm-hmm. But when you conform and you're uniform, you're conforming and uniform to one thing. And the truth is mm-hmm. that it hasn't been to Christ. Mm-hmm. It has mm-hmm. been to dominant culture of our tribe. Yeah. And wow. I say that to say, coming from what I come from in the Caribbean, my dominant culture of language, of education, and mm-hmm. even it was British and French. You know, and yeah. then country and Western, you know, so there were things that influence and you conform to, and we can do the same thing in the church. We come in and lose all the parts of us. You've lost many parts of your, or left right. it behind. Right. And right. so as we are doing this podcast, we're going to talk about how to hold all those spaces, how to be fully you in your community, mm-hmm. in your tribe. You don't have to leave it right. to be fully you. We have Christ, we're in, you know, we're buried with him, raised, you know, we're raised with him in life, in new life, and we get to live our lives. So as you're thinking through your identity, who are you? Mm-hmm. Do you know who you are?
Yeah.
You know, what makes you happy? What makes you sad? What triggers you? What is your attachment style? How do you build, who are you? What has yeah. formed you and shaped you? What are some things you may need to deal with in order to move forward? And so as we're throwing these questions at you, we're going to hit those a lot. Like for me,
yeah,
Jasmine, you don't know this about me, but before I became a Christian, before I, you know, 20 some years ago, I worked in an abortion clinic. You know, I taught in the inner city at one point. I had to learn how to become how to code switch. I didn't even know what that meant until I lived in Los Angeles mm-hmm. and had to learn that, you know. I've worked several different jobs. There's so many different parts of me that people don't know and don't talk through. And right. and you kind of just share it when you're in a study with someone, you're like, oh, here's the bad stuff I've done. But okay, is it though? Let's talk through that. Mm. Why did you choose that career? Why did you choose that job? I worked at U-Haul. Right. There are lots of different things. I went to three different universities and graduated in my fourth one, you know? So it's like, there's so many different parts of us. So as we're mm-hmm. moving forward, we want to explore those things. So if you are listening to us, we want to know what would you like us to explore? What are some topics? Mm-hmm. You know, you would like, what is the pot? Where can they leave us that information, Jazz? Where is the website?
Yes, it's www.unpresentablepartspod.com. Mm-hmm. And you can go there, you can comment on the episode. You can also talk about things that you do want to hear, that you do want to discuss. And we really want to create just a safe space for women. And women of color too, to talk about their experiences and as we share ours. So we'll get into it. We do want to talk about gender roles, and we want to talk about sexuality, and we want to talk about abortion, and we want to talk about mental health, physical health. We want to talk about it all and our perspectives and what we've been through. So I'm so excited. So please, if you have any comments, anything you would like to discuss, please visit www.unpresentablepartspod.com.
Wonderful. Well, we look forward to listening, talking, listening to each other, mm-hmm. talking to you guys. We hope you were able to be edified through our time listening with us. And so until next time, bye for now. Peace. And oh, wait, I forgot to ask them, Jazz. I forgot to ask them. Guys, while you're doing all the other stuff with sharing your story and looking up your identity, one of the things we want you to actually sit down and talk to yourself first and say, what's unpresentable about me today? And how can I show up in the world authentically despite what I feel is unpresentable?
Go ahead, shave those armpits.
Shave the armpits, shave the legs, get your eyebrows done. All right, ladies, you have a wonderful day.
Until Bye. Next time. We'll be right back.